What up? It's your boy Dean Thomas here. Thank you for stopping by and having a listen. This is my new show, as if I needed a new fucking show. But this is two shows down. This is the third episode, and this show is called Dean's Got Answers. Answers to what? Answers to anything and everything. In this show, I'll break down the questions you have about the UFC. I'll provide my answers. It might not be what you're looking for, but guess what? I know that's not why you're tuning in, right? You want to hear from me, Dean Thomas, UFC vet, coach to the biggest names of the sport, co-star of Dana White Looking for a Fight, host of the Dean Diaries. I'm an analyst, podcaster, comedian, influencer. I do it all. I've been there. I've done that. But I'm going to keep this show simple. Each episode, I'm going to tackle three questions about the UFC. I'm going to give you my take, my opinion, and my answers to each. I'll hit on everything from the fun and wild moments the sport has to offer to the inner workings of the sport. No question is off limits. And by the way, if you have a question for me, you can always just DM me at Dean Thomas. At Dean, spelled D-I-N, Thomas. Oh, you know what else I'm going to do? Each episode, I'm going to slide up into my Rolodex and holler at a homie for a second opinion. I'll bring on the biggest names of the sport, see if they agree or disagree with me. Today, I'm going to holler at one of the top lightweights in the world, Beneil Dariush. On this episode, I'm going to break down and answer the following questions. First, now what the fuck is up with, and I'm going to talk about some crazy moments of the sport, but what the fuck was up with all the madness at UFC 281? Every fight on the main card was a finish. Izzy gets finished for the first time in his MMA career. Crazy. And I had on a brand new TaylorMade suit. You can see the pictures of that. It was fly. Second, who deserves to fight for the bantamweight and lightweight titles? Man, those are the best divisions in the UFC. It's crazy how they can't find a legit, real contender. But they got to find somebody. And third, what's more effective in MMA? Sambo or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? I tell you what. Some of y'all going to be pissed off when y'all hear this answer. But turn up the volume, kick back, and take heed to the words I speak. The UFC has had so many exciting cards over the years, but arguably one of the best in recent memory just happened. I know that's cliche to say, but it did. So I must break down and answer what the fuck was up with all the madness at UFC 281. New York City, Madison Square Garden, represent! Every fight on the main card was a finish. From the first fight of the night, Carlos Ulberg. God, I hate that guy. He's good looking. All the girls love him. And he kicked my ass. And he had Nico Nagamorano slumped up like a drunk dude at the bar because his wife just ran off with a guy that looked like Carlos Ulberg. I hate him. And to the last fight of the night, the most anticipated and revenge fight was the main event. Israel Adesanya versus Alex Pereira. A fight filled with a movie-like storyline, and it didn't disappoint. Now, let's face it. In terms of skill, Izzy's just a better fighter. He was beating Alex to the punch. He was making a miss. He was tagging Alex for the majority of the fight. And to everyone's surprise, Izzy out-grappled Alex. He looked like Khabib on Alex. Okay, I'm getting carried away. I'm bullshitting. He ain't look like Khabib. He looked more like a blue belt playing around with a brand new friend who never trained before. But that's not the point. Izzy showed a well-roundedness like he's never done before. So much that Alex's corner told him he needed to finish Adesanya before the fifth round. And boy, did he get it. He trapped Izzy against the fence and exploded on him. He got the stoppage. After the fight, Glover Teixeira came up to me. And while he seemed relieved, he was upset with Alex for taking too long. He said he told Alex he needed to finish, and Alex looked at him and said, I do. As if he didn't know. Well, the message got through, and Alex prevailed. Now, it's easy to suggest that Alex is Izzy's kryptonite, and it's a tough argument to disprove it considering their history. But you have to understand that even though Alex is up 3-0 on Izzy, that's still relatively a small sample size. And if you talk the total control of the fight time that they've had, Izzy still kind of controls that. He just hasn't figured out a way how to stop the big moments of Alex. And there's a reason for that. Izzy isn't a big enough puncher to deter Alex from continuing to pursue him, and his finishing ability on the ground isn't strong enough yet. Izzy should be able to get an immediate rematch. When he figures out how to put more fear into Alex to keep him out of his face, maybe he can finish him. This is good for Izzy though. Everyone needs a rival to keep them on their toes. But even before that fight, there was madness in the building. The co-main event had a women's strawweight title up for grab as Carla Esparza faced off against Zhang Weili. A lot of people might think it was a surprise that Weili would finish on the ground. I did not. I figured Weili would be the better fighter everywhere, and it would be relatively easy. In fact, Carla did better than I thought she would. To no one's surprise, Weili immediately showed the dominance on her feet. She was better. Better technique, smoother, more comfortable, and powerful. We all knew that Carla needed to get this on the ground, and she did. But even when she did, now what? Just because you get it to the ground doesn't mean you're going to be any better on the ground. However, Carla, she held her own for a while. But in a transition in the second round, while Weili was defending a shot, she found the neck of Carla. And at the end of the day, you don't defend chokes in wrestling. And that is what happened. I don't think many people suspected Carla to hold the belt for that long. And honestly, I'm not even sure Weili is going to hold it for that long. Rose is still out there. And I think Amanda Lemos presents a major problem for anybody at the top. There's still a lot of work for both of them out there. Good luck. Another fight that lived up to expectations was Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler. This bloody fight had some insane moments, and we all knew it would. It played out the way a lot of people thought it would. Chandler would pour it on early, Dustin surviving, slowing it down to a manageable pace, then taking over. Dustin, after a complete bloodbath that we saw Michael Chandler spewing blood all over Dustin's face like a horror movie, found the finishing choke in the third round. Now, it's easy to suggest that Michael Chandler could fight smarter. But he wouldn't be him. If he fought smarter, he would not be him. He doesn't have the skill set to fight a slow, strategical, tactical fight. Just because you can play one instrument doesn't mean you can play them all. He might understand what it means to fight smart, but can he do that at a high level? Probably not. It's just not him. I think Michael Chandler fights his best when he fights wild, and we love him for it regardless. There's still life left for both fighters. They may not be realistic about their chances for a title though. If that's the case, I wouldn't doubt if we saw them both move up in weight and fight in super fight style matches. Weight classes are designed to establish contenders for the title. If you don't want to put yourself in that race, why cut all the weight? Just move up and have some fun. I see both of those guys doing that in the future. But even before that, more madness ensued as legend of the sport Frankie Edgar had his last fight in the organization at UFC 281 against bantamweight, the very talented Chris Gutierrez. And this fight didn't disappoint. Or maybe it did. There's something about watching legends go out like that. I honestly don't like to see it. But you can't tell these knuckleheads nothing. They don't listen. They must learn the hard way, and it's only fair. It's their life, their career. They can go out the way they choose. Chris put it on Frankie from go to KO. He couldn't miss. He peppered him with punches and kicks that made Frankie look like he didn't even belong in there. About 2 minutes in, Frankie ate a knee that put him out. Great showing for Chris, but it's always sad to see our legends flatlined. Now, Chris is a very talented individual in the most talented division. He's barely ranked. And when I think about some of the other talented guys in the division, Adrian Yanez, Mario Bautista, Jonathan Martinez, it's hard not to get excited about some of the fights you could make here. I love this division, and I love what they're bringing to the table. But all this madness of the main card kicked off with the first fight of the night between Dan Hooker and Claudio Puelles. Now, make no mistake about this. Puelles is a dangerous fighter. His leg lock game is lethal. In fact, I thought Puelles was going to win, and I thought it put Hooker in a very tough spot. And you know what? Poirier's had his moments. Now, a lot of people will criticize Poirier for his approach. His approach wasn't wrong. His butt scooting was actually not wrong. It's not a common approach to see how fighters attack, but sometimes it can be successful. It's the stuff we're going to be talking about on Monday morning if it works. Now, it wasn't successful, so now we're talking about it for a different reason. But trust me, it wasn't his approach that was embarrassing. It was his lack of diversity. Because Poirier has been so successful with leg locks, he was expected to get it. And when he didn't, he panicked. And he didn't have another plan. Now, his original plan was fine, but you have to have another plan. This is chess, this ain't checkers. You need more. So Poirier, go find more. But credit to Dan Hooker, who was able to remain calm, defend himself, and put Poirier away. Dan is made of something different, and you have to admire it. So I ask you, what the fuck was up with the madness at UFC 281? The entire main card ended in a finish. 11 of 14 fights of the night ended in a finish. So what crazy ass storyline is going to happen in the UFC world next? We just going to have to wait and see. The UFC's bantamweight and lightweight divisions are both stacked. So who deserves to be next to challenge for the bantamweight and lightweight titles? First, let's take a look at the bantamweight division. We got Aljamain Sterling, the most unfairly treated champ in history. Second, Sean O'Malley. Next, we got Merab, Piotr Jan, Marlon Vera, TJ Dillashaw, Corey Sandhagen, and the list goes on from there. Now, Sean O'Malley rose up 10 spots to become the number one contender in the division after a very close split decision over Piotr Jan. Now, even though he's the number one contender, is he ready to fight Aljamain Sterling? That is the question. Now, what I find to be completely interesting is that prior to the O'Malley and Jan fight, everybody was talking about the winner would get a title shot. Now, was that because Jan was a 3-1 favorite and we all thought he was going to win? And most people thought he was champ anyways, as if Aljo got lucky beating him. Funny how now O'Malley gets the win. We don't hear a lot about a fight between Aljo and O'Malley. I believe that is a terrible fight for O'Malley. And clearly, other people do too, because no one is talking about making that fight happen. It's so obsolete that even Aljo doesn't take it seriously enough to demand it. In Aljo's case, he says he wants to take a little break anyway. Luckily for him, it works out so these other guys can fight it out and figure it out. I believe it's a perfect time to have Sean O'Malley fight Chito Vera. And then the winner of that can fight Aljo. By that time, Aljo should be ready to fight. Now, any of these other guys can fight Merab, who actually might be the best fighter in the division. But since he won't fight Aljo, you can't have him knocking off contenders on the way up. Now, did I tell you I witnessed Merab do about 60 pull-ups on the scaffolding on the streets of New York, walking back to the hotel from MSG after UFC 281? Dress shirt and all, it was the most insane thing I ever seen. This guy is an absolute maniac. The only other name that comes to mind in terms of fighting for the belt would be Henry Cejudo. Now, his accolades are unmatched. Triple C. Now, it's hard to become champion in just one thing. This man did it in three different ways. UFC flyweight, UFC bantamweight, and Olympic gold medalist. And for that reason, you have to put some respect on the boy's name. Now, unfortunately, this is a what have you done for me lately business. Him taking so much time off didn't do him any favors. Now, fighters have to be careful playing hardball and overestimating their value. It's a dangerous game to play if you lose. Now, only time will tell what the value of Henry Cejudo is to the fans and to the UFC. If it's there, he'll get a shot. If it's not, he could take a seat next to Nicolai Negomirano at the bar. Now, the lightweight title picture is even messier, as the featherweight champion and the number one pound-for-pound fighter, Alexander Volkanovski, will move up and get the next shot at the lightweight title at UFC 284 on February 11th in Australia, in a fight that could determine the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Nothing is pissing lightweights off like Volk moving up and getting a shot. However, those that are actually in position to complain can't, because they already had their shot. Does Volkanovski deserve to fight for a lightweight title? Now here's the thing. How do you tell the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world he can't move up and fight for a title? After what he did to Max Holloway, I'm here for it. I mean, we wouldn't tell John Jones he couldn't move up to heavyweight to fight Francis. Why are we going to tell Alex anything different? And I do believe this fight can be more competitive than you think. I still lean towards Islam because of his grappling and his control, but I think Alex has what it takes to keep it close and not get mauled. I think with his movement, his high-level fight IQ, and his stature, he can make things very difficult for Islam. I think Islam might have a hard time getting inside on Alex and being able to control him. Alex is shorter, but he uses that to his advantage on the inside. The biggest issue with this fight happening is that we might be screwing Beneil Dariush after his win against Mateusz Gamrot. Now, based on merit alone, how could you not give Beneil a shot? His run is as impressive as any, and he's done everything we've asked of him, except have fan support. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, this is a TV show and we need ratings. In spectator sports, and especially in this industry, it's not always about merit, it's about viewership as well. Merit and ability is a given. You have to have that to be there. But what separates you from others is your ability to have people want you to be there so bad that they're going to pay money to see you. And at the end of the day, that is the bottom line. Bills have to be paid. Now, I believe Beneil has a good skill set to compete with Islam. Now, even before Islam was champion and these two were supposed to fight before, I was looking forward to it. Now, I don't think any more of Islam now that he beat Oliveira and became champion. I always thought highly of him. I'm just not sure Beneil ever had the skill set and had it in him to beat Islam before. But what I know that he does have, he has the skill set, the heart, and the resume to warrant him an opportunity to prove it. And with that said, I'm not sure anybody other than Volkanovski or Beneil is worthy at a shot at the lightweight title. I'd be more interested in seeing Islam dare to be great himself and move up to welterweight and scrap with those boys before we give another person a shot. Now, who deserves to be next to challenge for the bantamweight and lightweight titles? To cap it, the winner of O'Malley and Chito Vera for bantamweight and Alexander Volkanovski at lightweight. Now, especially after the Charles Oliveira and Islam Makhachev fight at UFC 280, it has us all wondering, what's more effective in MMA, Sambo or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Now, this goes all the way back to the old days. Think Mario Sperry and Igor Zinoviev. Igor won that one. Henzo Gracie and Oleg Taktarov. Henzo won that one. But first, let's take a look at what they are at the core of the root. What is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu focuses on the skill of taking an opponent to the ground, controlling the opponent, and gaining a dominant position and using a number of techniques to force them into submission via joint locks or chokeholds. But what is Sambo? Well, Sambo is a Russian martial art fighting style or combat sport developed in the Soviet area of Russia. Now, Sambo combines the ground fighting and grappling aspects of judo and wrestling, such as throws and submission holds, with the use of standing fighting techniques such as punches, kicks, knee strikes, and elbows. So to further answer this question, what's more effective in MMA, Sambo or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I had to holla at a homie. So please welcome the number 4 ranked lightweight in the world, BJJ Black Belt, head coach at Kings MMA in Anaheim, and all-around gangster, my man, my brother, Beneil Dariush. So now I am here. I got my homie with me. It's always a pleasure to talk to my good man, Beneil. Beneil, what's happening?
What's up, brother? Good to see you.
So we've been talking about what's more effective, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Sambo for MMA? So, like, just off the top of your head, just give me your basic answer.
It's not simple, but I would say Sambo because, I'm going to say Sambo, but it's not simple because we have put Jiu-Jitsu in a box right now. The way we do Jiu-Jitsu is like, okay, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to pull guard, and I'm going to work my way up. Or, like, some guys will do takedowns, but, you know, Jiu-Jitsu is, I think, in reality is the best base as far as grappling goes, because in wrestling you only focus on takedowns and control. In Sambo, you have a little bit of both, but I think it's a little bit more wild. In reality, Jiu-Jitsu is the best because if you do it right, if you're not putting it in a box where you do make your wrestling the best, because you can incorporate all the wrestling you want into your Jiu-Jitsu. You cannot incorporate Jiu-Jitsu into wrestling. That's right. The difference. Like, you can't pull guard in wrestling, but in Jiu-Jitsu, you can do all the takedowns you want and use those takedowns to be successful. So I think Jiu-Jitsu, there's more routes in Jiu-Jitsu, and there's more ways to win and more things to do in Jiu-Jitsu. But for some reason, we put it in a box and we say, oh, I have to have a good guard, and I have to just, like, not let my guard get passed. And if you just think of it like that, it's actually not that good for MMA.
Well, so when you think about it, it's not necessarily Jiu-Jitsu that's not good for MMA, but essentially the way it's been applied as of right now, based on who's applying it.
Yes, it's the mindset. Think of it like this. The mindset is super important because, for example, the reason why wrestlers do so well in MMA is their mindset of drilling. They drill a lot, and when you give them new information, sometimes they won't even like it, but they'll drill it. And because they continue to drill it, it lets them grow. So there's a reason why the more you drill, the better your foundation is, you know? So that's what makes wrestlers so good. They'll have like an hour and a half of practice, and they'll just be drilling the whole time. And I don't see that with a lot of guys in other sports. Even boxing, like, guys will hit mitts, guys will do these drills, I would say, more than jiu-jitsu. I think that's where if anything we're missing in jiu-jitsu is the fact that we don't drill as much as we should.
Okay, so now let's talk about maybe even just the more technical aspect. So, like, that's the mentality, the philosophical aspect, but the more technical aspect, I mean, you said there's a lot of different ways to win in jiu-jitsu and a lot of different routes that you can take in terms of a fight. So what do you think are the most effective ways that you can use jiu-jitsu in terms of the skill set and the technical skill set of it?
So as far as jiu-jitsu goes, for MMA purposes, you can incorporate that wrestling as far as takedowns. You can have amazing takedowns. No one's stopping a jiu-jitsu guy from having good takedowns. The only person stopping a jiu-jitsu guy from having good takedowns is the jiu-jitsu guy. So if the jiu-jitsu guy is willing to use good takedowns and then control, it makes them so hard to deal with. It makes them very dangerous.
Now, what do you think makes jiu-jitsu guys a little bit different? Like the ones who are, so I mean, when you think about jiu-jitsu guys, there's some who've been tremendously loyal to the art, guys like Damian Maya, Hani Yaya. What do you think makes them so successful? Because I mean, they've been able to compete at the highest level with just basically using just pure jiu-jitsu and very limited striking.
Damian Maya is a great example of incorporating good wrestling into jiu-jitsu. What he did so well was, okay, he's going to shoot first. Always looks to shoot first. If I can get the takedown, great. Can't get the takedown, from the shot, pulls guard. From that guard, establishes a position where he can either come back on top or establish a submission. And he continued to make that, refine that process more and more and more, and it became so dominant. That's why he was so dominant with it. And his ability to go from like bottom half guard to your back toe finish, like, these are the things he just continued to refine over the years. And he understood that he wasn't going to be this best striker, and so because of that, his foundation in grappling was so strong, and that's what made him so good. I think it was knowing the routes that he was going to take and continuing to refine those routes.
All right, so how much experience do you have personally with Sambo?
I don't, well, I have a guy here, Nikolai. He fought in a lot of Sambo, and I understand there's combat Sambo and then there's regular Sambo. Bro, it's intense. Like, you know, the guys in the shorts and the gi top, because the way you can grab each other and throw knees, it's deadly. It's very deadly.
So, I mean, that seems like it translates over to MMA a little bit better because you're dealing with that from the jump. I mean, you know, like in jiu-jitsu, like you said, we put it in a box, but I mean, it's always kind of been in a box, more so now than ever. But when you're talking about jiu-jitsu, think about it. It's like you start jiu-jitsu from a beginner and you're learning self-defense and you're learning how to stand up and you're learning respect and bowing. But it seems like in the Sambo route, it starts off with sport and combat.
Yeah. So I would say it like this, exactly like you said, and that's the reason why I picked Sambo. I would say Sambo is a better way to approach MMA in terms of the all-around game. But for the ground game, Jiu-Jitsu is much more refined, and I think it's way ahead of Sambo.
Why do you think that?
Because in terms of submissions, in terms of the details in the submissions, and the ways you get up and the things you do, and not having that gi top, because that gi top makes a big difference in Sambo. I think having to work without that in no-gi specifically, it's more detailed, and I think they're just ahead. I think I would say they're a couple of generations ahead of Sambo still.
Okay.
Even so, the leg locks.
Right, for sure. So, you know, in 2013, the phrase, if Sambo was easy, it would be called jiu-jitsu. And that went viral. Khabib wore the t-shirt. When that came out, I mean, it was kind of a big deal. I mean, it was a big slap in the face to jiu-jitsu, and I know that you're a representative of jiu-jitsu, so what did you think about that? And is there any truth to it?
There is truth to it in the fact that, like I mentioned, jiu-jitsu guys, they take the safest course. They go out there, they pull guard, and they kind of work that route. While Sambo, like, it's looked down upon, so they have to go through the takedown. They have to fight from every situation. But at the same time, the depth of jiu-jitsu, the foundation of jiu-jitsu, I think is way deeper than Sambo. So I think those are the difference. I still think Sambo is all around is a better approach for MMA. For the ground, jiu-jitsu is a better foundation.
Now, it seems to me like there's always been kind of a beef. I mean, we talk about American wrestling versus jiu-jitsu. I mean, we've always talked about that, but I've always thought that there was a rivalry between Sambo and jiu-jitsu for the longest time. And I think it goes back to Igor Zinoviev and Mario Sperry and, you know, Henzo Gracie, yes, and Oleg Taktarov. So to me, like, that's the rivalry that's kind of all, I mean, in Minotauro and Fedor, so.
100%. And here's the thing. If we're talking about combat Sambo, or are we talking about regular Sambo? Because if we're talking about regular Sambo, I think Jiu-Jitsu is better. Because mm-hmm. I think if you have a no time limit match in regular Sambo against a Jiu-Jitsu guy, I think the Jiu-Jitsu guy will win. Because his depth in submissions is greater. Right. That's my opinion. But if we're talking about combat in terms of MMA, yeah, that's going to be different. And so it's always been back and forth.
Well, to me, I've always felt that the time limits for jiu-jitsu guys have been their biggest opponent. Not size, not strength, but the time limits, because I've always felt like time limits made jiu-jitsu guys force them to make mistakes, because then they couldn't play the type of game that they've wanted.
Definitely in just pure grappling, time limit is against the jiu-jitsu guy, because he's more comfortable with longer matches. He's willing to play it safe and whatever. But when there is a time limit, they rush, they make mistakes, they get caught and stuff. But at the same time, if it were talking combat, you know, they used to do those old matches in jiu-jitsu where they have like jiu-jitsu guys would do like Vale Tudo fights, and they'd last like 2-3 hours. That's not great for the jiu-jitsu guy. Even if he wins, that guy's coming out with some brain damage. You know, you don't want too many of those. So
for sure,
there's so much to it. But like, what route are you going to take? It's all about the routes you take and how refined you're going to make those routes. Because if you pick the routes and you refine them to the best of your capabilities, that's what makes you a champion. As far as what martial art you pick, you can find success with whatever martial art. And we've seen that. We've seen champions that are strikers. We've seen champions that are grapplers. For example, you've picked boxing as your foundation. What are you going to... Now, that's your main route. All those other little routes that you need to know, your grappling, how are you going to approach grappling? Are you going to have a great sprawl? Are you going to be able to be good at getting up? Those are the routes you have to also pick, and you have to refine those routes, because when you're in those bad situations, you have to find a way to get back into good situations. So, bro, it's this martial art is better than that martial art, that martial art is better than this martial art. It gets old because... I don't think it's that simple. I think the best thing is your mindset. I think what kind of mindset you have and how hard you're willing to work, that's really what's important.
Because I was going to ask you, because like it seems to me like, especially with the Sambo, even combat Sambo, it's a good mixture of wrestling and submissions and striking, but that's not very much different from like old school what Lucha Libre was or what Pancrase was. But so why are the Russians more dominant than everybody else doing that same thing?
Well, I mean, how many catch wrestling gyms here do you know?
I don't know any, you know.
That's what I'm saying. It's not popular here. That's the reason why. We've picked collegiate wrestling. That's like our sport. We have boxing. That's our sport. We don't really, like, who practices catch wrestling? We don't have that many guys. Jiu-jitsu, it's new to America. And I think that's the difference. The reason why they're so much more successful in these other sports is because they love them. They enjoy them more, and so they spend more time in them. And they put more effort into these sports.
So then I got to ask you. So now, you know, knowing this, it almost seems as though they have a leg up. Now, your next fight could very well be against a Sambo guy, one of the best in the world in Islam. What is it that you need to do differently to take your jiu-jitsu in there and to compete against this man?
I believe my wrestling is just as good, if not better than his, right? But as far as what I need to do for my jiu-jitsu, I can't be so close-minded with my jiu-jitsu where it's like, okay, he took me down. I have to play guard like a traditional guard. I have to be willing to get up. And unlike those guys who get up and then, and that's it, just get up. In the process of getting up, I need to be able to threaten him. this is different. This kind of jiu-jitsu is very different. For example, I'm working a get-up, but he gives me a leg. I take the leg. I'm working a get-up. He gives me his neck. I take the neck. I'm working my get-up. He gives me a sweep. I take the sweep. You have to create a different kind of jiu-jitsu, because you can't just have a jiu-jitsu where you're on your back and you're waiting for submissions, because the longer you wait, the more punches you take. But when you can create a pressure, and that pressure is coming from the threat of you getting up, and so he has to commit into stopping you from getting up, that creates for me opportunities to make the take the next step. And that's what I did in my last fight. The few times that I was taken down, because I threatened the get up, I was able to find avenues of threatening his leg. I found avenues of getting back up safer than before, basically getting myself out of danger. So if I'm going to fight with jiu-jitsu against Makhachev, it will be a different kind of jiu-jitsu, something that they're not familiar with. And that's going to be my weapon.
So I was going to, and that brings me to my next question. Do you think that maybe, like you said in the very beginning, that jiu-jitsu is kind of in a box, that this is the outside of the box jiu-jitsu, the part of jiu-jitsu that hasn't really been evolved to adapt to current MMA, I think. And that is exactly what you're talking about.
Yes. And the thing is, in the beginning it did. Like, people were coming over with jiu-jitsu and they kind of started and they stopped. It became just get up. The new thing is just get up. Get up, get a wizard, move your way up. There's no threatening people as you're getting up. There's zero threats. Like, you watch guys who work the get up, there's zero threats. They're like, okay, they put their hands on the ground, they get their backs to the wall, and then they start build up. There's never a threat of the guy attacking you. Like, you never threaten his legs, you never threaten his neck, but they're there. If you look for them, they're there. There's ways to attack. There's ways to put him in trouble. There's ways to take the back. There's a lot of things there. And I think because we don't do that, we haven't evolved. So jiu-jitsu has an opportunity right now to adapt and grow and evolve. And I want to be at the forefront of that.
Well, Benil, you have to come to one of the sessions. I was just doing a session with Ryan Hall, and we were just discussing these things about how to evolve jiu-jitsu better for MMA. And we were talking about bringing Kenny Florian over. So maybe we need to have you over as well.
That would be great. He's actually a guy I've watched. For example, from the 50-50, I made a mistake in my last fight in the 50-50, but I've watched some of his stuff. I've tried to take from it. He does some awesome things from there. He has very good ideas. He's definitely ahead of me in certain positions, but then there's other positions that I think that I might have something to add to, but maybe not. He might know him as well anyways, but he's definitely in certain, there are positions that he has mastered. He's very good.
Well, I'll tell you, he's a very creative thinker. And he's a genius in terms of body mechanics and things. So he's very creative, and he's just in this small little town of Virginia, and he doesn't have a lot of other people out there with him to help him create. So this is why I was like, this is important for us to get together and master these positions, because jiu-jitsu needs to make a comeback.
100%. And the only reason we're not making a comeback is because we are stuck in the old ways. There's new things, man. Jiu-jitsu is growing so fast, and no one seems to want to be taking part in it. It's weird.
So one last thing, Benil. If not Islam or the winner of Islam and Volk, who do you want?
Well, I'm hoping for Charles, because he's number one. I want to fight the best guys in the world, and I do believe Charles is one of them. And then I was hoping it was, if Charles says no, I would have been Dustin Poirier, but I also saw an interview with Dustin Poirier saying he's not really excited about me, which at first I was upset. And then I'm like, okay, it's disappointing, whatever. But honestly, I'm kind of more like, listen, Dustin, if you're not trying to fight the best guys in the world, this might not be the sport for you anymore. You should genuinely consider retiring, because in this sport, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. If you're not back in the gym and you don't have that fire, there's these young guys, man. There's the next generation is coming. And they're dogs, and they're good. And I know Dustin. I know he can dig deep, and he's amazing. But bro, if you're not willing to get back in the gym, you're not willing to learn new stuff, you're not willing to take these extra steps, you're not willing to fight the best guys, this might not be the sport for you, man. You might get hurt. That would be my thing for Dustin. Because if he's not excited to fight me, like, this might not be the best sport for him.
Well, I appreciate that, and I will express that sentiment to him. I'm sure it may make its rounds to him, but I appreciate you, Benil, man. You are the man. I look forward to seeing you fight. You've been doing great things, man, and I'm very proud of you for the success you've had, and it's just been a pleasure to watch you grow, man. You are the man.
Thanks, brother. You take care.
All right, man. Peace. Well, that was a great conversation I just had with Benil Dariush. I love talking to the man. He's a very progressive thinker. He gave me his insight as to what he thought was more important in MMA between Sambo and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. As for me, I truly believe that it comes down to the individual. Whatever the individual can do with their style, whether it be Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, whether it be Sambo, or whatever it is that you're using, I believe that it comes down to the individual and who can make their skills and their techniques, regardless of where they come from, whoever can make them work wins. And boom, I hope you guys enjoyed the show today. This was episode 3, and we chopped it up. We got into it. We talked about, one, what the fuck was up with all the madness at UFC 281. Every fight on the main card was a finish. Izzy getting finished for the first time, losing his belt. God damn. And don't forget, I was out there in my tailor-made suit. Woo! 2, who deserves to be next to challenge for the bantamweight and lightweight titles? Oh, we gotta find this out. I can't wait to see who gets it, because those are my favorite divisions. And 3, what's more effective in MMA, Sambo or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? I had a chance to chop it up with Benil Dariush. He gave me his insight. Thanks for listening to Dean's Got Answers. We'll be back in the near future with a new episode, but be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dean Thomas. Dean is spelled D-I-N Thomas. Leave a rating and a review for the podcast. Tune in next time as I'll have the answers for everything going on in the UFC. You've got my answers. If you have any more questions, be sure to hit me up. DM me. I'm always available. Peace.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You know you need protein to fuel results, but it's not easy when you're drinking the same bland, chalky shake every day. Stop punishing yourself and get to GNC for the best protein in the game, including all the hottest brands and crave-worthy flavors that'll keep you coming back for more. We're talking protein that legit tastes like cookies, your favorite cereals, indulgent desserts, and more. So bust out of your protein rut and actually look forward to those shakes with unbeatable protein at unbeatable prices. Fuel your fitness with protein at GNC. Yeah.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey friends, want to grow your business faster and stronger? Wondering how to find and keep top talent? It starts with your culture. Insperity, a leading HR provider, can help your business create a culture that drives growth. Download their free ebook, The Future of Business is Culture, at Insperity.com. With the right people, processes, and values in place, your company can realize its full potential. Visit Insperity.com to see how Insperity provides HR that makes a difference.